podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist? Who got the assist?
Hello, so we're recording just off the end of the United game. And wow, can't be the outcome as a non-Bruno captainer, but there we are. I'm sure we'll talk about that in just a second. This is the second of our quickfire pods we're doing in this part of the season, just because it's, you know, so hectic. And I know blanks, doubles are all the rage right now, but we're going to leave those until our full fat pods next Monday, where we'll be joined by FPL General, as well as having Nick back, because there's no Nick today. He's snowed under with work, needed some headspace. But luckily, Anthony is back from the exam trenches for a very, very short period, by the sounds of it, to join me for this one. You're right, Anthony, how are you doing?
Yeah, it's good to be back again, Tom. Sorry to miss the last pod, but you guys soldiered on without me. Enjoyed listening by myself while in between two exams, so it was all good. Anyway, we are going on ahead with this pod and trying to get it recorded so that people have some answers ahead of the next game week. So we are Who Got the Assist. If you want to get into our mini league, it's CPSULF is the code. Agenda for this pod is very bare bones. We're going to do the market forces and then we're going to get onto your questions. Thanks very much to everyone who got onto Tom's thread earlier.
Cool. Yeah. Thanks very much, everybody. Quite a lot of interesting stuff this week. I suspect that obviously if I put a question thread out now, the question would be slightly different, but hopefully we've captured everything in the zeitgeist pretty much. As I said a second ago, blanks and doubles, we know you want to know all about those, and we will go into them in just a few short days, but not quite right for a podcast which has about 24 hours shelf life. So first, as Anthony mentioned, is the market forces, and it's quite interesting at the moment, isn't Anthony? There's a bit of a rogue name at the top of the charts.
Yeah, of all people, I never thought I'd see the day where Pedro Neto was the most transferred in player, but that is the world we live in, Tom. Some good fixtures there, and of course with Raúl Jiménez injured, he's definitely getting into good positions for Wolves with Raúl Jiménez absent, so it's quite understandable that at 5.8 million he's a pretty popular pick. The second on the most transferred in is a slightly better, more normal name to be there, Mo Salah. You might have heard of him, 12.3 million, but people are of course trying to get him back in after he deflected a fine goal against Tottenham, and he has Crystal Palace away coming up at the weekend, so that'll be just fine. Kind of the other transfers in that are kind of worth talking about there who have just over 50,000 transfers in: Son, you've heard of him as well, Wilfred Zaha, Patrick Bamford, Harry Kane's almost got 50k transfers in, and then Yannick Vestergaard, there he is. People still getting in those Southampton defenders. He's up to 4.9 million now, which is bloody hilarious.
Yeah, it's this year's Stephen Ward, isn't he? People are logging in going, I've got 5 million-ish to spend on a defender. Oh, this guy will do. He's got a lot of points. Then you go. Mo Salah, we've got to point out that Nick did the premium hokey cokey in the end, honour bound to say. I'm not enjoying this at all, I promise. He sold Mo Salah, brought in Bruno Fernandes, and he's got a bit of a swing there. A little bit of a swing. I feel sorry for him. On the other hand, in transfers out, moving to a few on from there, Jota has been sold still in droves, 177k transfers out, which probably explains why Neto and Zaha are gathering a bit of a head of steam, doesn't it?
Yeah, it absolutely does. And the artist formerly known as J-Rod as well is there, 7.7 million. He's dropping in price and he's dropping in popularity as well. The likes of Riyad Mahrez and Kevin De Bruyne being sold as well. Timo Werner still being sold a bit in the Jota category of I can't believe he wasn't sold last week or many weeks ago category. And then there's a few defenders being sold, Arsenal defenders amongst them. Some slow learners there, Gabriel and Bellerin up there in the top three most sold defenders.
Yeah, exactly. Gabriel, I think at one point, was he the first player to rise this year?
I don't think he rose in game week one, but definitely rose after game week two. He had a goal against Fulham on the opening day and then got going after that. But Arsenal never got going. That's the problem.
Yeah, that was it. Well, very unsurprising. A lot of transfers in now, I guess. And now the game has just finished. Shall we do our game week reviews just quickly?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's dig straight into those. We'll break with our usual protocol of Nick going last, as in the fact that he has always beating us this year. And I'll just go on ahead. I've got 49 points net, which, to be perfectly honest with you, is just fine. It's a perfectly serviceable mini green arrow. I'm probably going to just get up into the top 600k. Where did it come from? Defenders, basically. Martinez, Zufal, Chilwell as well. So 5, 8, and 8 between those. Cancelo with a one pointer. Grealish disappointing 3, but he could have had a million with the amount of key passes he got in there. De Bruyne, I only vice captained with 4 points, which seems very good compared to my captain, Bruno Fernandes, who I also did the premium hokey cokey to get in. Obviously, only getting 2 points double to 4. Stuart Dallas coming off the bench yet again for me. I think that's the third time this season he's come off the bench with a return 7-pointer. Nice. Dominic Calvert-Lewin and then 2 blanks from Souček. And Harry Kane will take it.
Yeah, definitely will take it. I didn't fare much better with a 50. Emi Martinez this evening, obviously with the 8-pointer, is actually my highest scoring player this week. I guess net. De Bruyne with the captaincy with the 8. I still feel pretty dirty and still feel a little bit shocked, frankly, that was the quote-unquote winning captain between the Bruno and De Bruyne. This is a season defining which captain you choose. It was being trailed as has predictably petered out into a pile of rubbish. Mo Salah obviously got the goal, and I know that a lot of people are now angling to bring him back in ahead of Crystal Palace. But yeah, same as you, Chilwell as well with that assist. At the back, it wasn't that great, actually. I didn't get as many returns as you did. Kyle Walker with 1 point. Came off the bench and Mr. Diaz scored the own goal, which was obviously great. Man City hadn't conceded in 10 hours of football before his outswung boot converted that own goal in. And up front, returns yet again for my Tiddlers front three. Calvert-Lewin and Adams both with assists, and Paddy B, Patrick Bamford with a goal. So yeah, 50 up to 1.5 million. Hooray. And I think Nick got 45 this week, 46, I think maybe, for those who are counting. I'm pretty sure he's still in top 100K somewhere or other.
Yeah, 46. Yeah, he's doing just fine, our Nicholas. He's flying ahead of both of us at the moment. So yeah. I'm sure he'll survive losing to us by, what, 3 or 4 points this week.
I know. It's a grey arrow, isn't it? Something like that.
Interesting one, though. It's kind of this game week. I think the story of it pretty much ties in with the power of doing nothing that we talked about a few weeks ago, with Salah flying along nicely and Son as well. Like, these were both kind of players that if you were advocates of the premium hokey cokey, with which both myself and Nicholas have been, you probably lost out, and like we both did this week. It's a funny game, and it's very hard to work out what to do with the premiums, and sometimes less is more.
Yeah, although I've got to give a shout out to someone who tweeted me earlier on, John Truelove, who did the hokey cokey, but a slightly different way to you guys, and brought in Martial and Rashford this week alongside Bruno, tripled up on United. Unfortunately, Captain Bruno, but yeah, Martial and Rashford, oh, inspired loads of moves. That's what, 15, 20 points, unique points to you. So more power to you, John. Well done. Right, let's move on to the Q&A then this week. That wasn't a question. It was just a humble brag and an ask for a shout out on the pod. But the real questions do come, and they start with Kevin De Bye-Bye. So Thomas Daines asks if KDB is now the cuttable midfield premium. If you can get Son and or Kane back on your side, FPL price, he asks the same. You know, is Son better value than KDB over the next few games or so? And FPL dummy Tom, I guess, kind of takes that question one further. Is Son going to be the player to keep up the underlying stats and be worthy of that sort of number? Let's take this one by one and talk about KDB first. I'm strongly considering selling this week, but my perception of this is coloured by two things. One, the doubles and blanks announcements, meaning I need more money eventually. And two, outcome bias. Let's talk about money first. I need the money now for the double game week and blank game week plan that I like. But I'm fully conscious of the fact I'm justifying any planning I do for selling with any stats I'm about to present. I'm just making that explicit, basically. We always say, I'm building this case objectively. No, I'm building it completely subjectively. I know why I'm doing it. I'm doing it just to justify myself. And the outcome bias is helping, obviously. So I've captained KDB 4 times this year. I've got 2 blanks, 1 quasi-blank, which now looks like a huge success, of course. But those extra 2 bonus points, they were just like a sympathy shag, weren't they? And there was a 1 double digit from him this season. So in my opinion, he and City don't look right, despite the stats being great. I'm always a big stat objectivity fan, but to the eye, I think it's just less clear. So I'm considering selling, maybe not this week, maybe I'll be selling soon. I'm a little bit angry with him, but less angry now, obviously, after Bruno Blank. So I'm going to try not to act rashly, but I'm considering getting rid of him in not very long. There's a good little bit of data on this, is that Bruno prior to this evening, in just on 900 minutes, had scored 83 points. Vardy, 920 minutes, 87. Salah, 95. Son, 105. Kane, 107. And KDB, same number of minutes, 60 points. So at least 20 points, over 20 points below all of these other players who are in the quote-unquote premium bracket. I know there's a bit of outcome bias there, but I still think that that is probably something worth bearing in mind when it comes to Kevin De Bruyne. For Ludenberg's team, yes, but he's not a talisman in the same way other FPL assets are. Like, he's not 11.5 million worth of talisman at the moment when you consider Bruno, 1 million less price, Son, 2.5 million less price at the start of the season, and comfortably outscoring him. What do you think on Kevin De Bruyne? Is it time for KD bye-bye?
Interesting set of words there, that he's not a 11.9 value talisman. Like, you see, the thing is that had we had even a single return in the last two games, I'm not sure we would go at that as resolutely, and I don't mean to shoot you down at all. And to be perfectly honest with you, I'm not going to get into planning for the double game weeks yet, and so I'm going to make my transfers just based on 1 or 2 week horizons at the moment, and I'll start worrying about the double game weeks a little bit further down the line. I just rather prioritize my kind of short-term point getting, and the fact of the matter is just the way my side is structured, I won't be selling De Bruyne. I have a Riyad Mahrez sized problem to get rid of before I get rid of him. Now, the thing is, his underlying stats are, they're fine, they're good, they're quite good. They're better than Son's, and they've been better than Son's for quite a bit of this season, but Son scores almost every single shot on target that he has. So that makes the underlying stats a little bit farcical. The thing with City, of course, is that it's also undeniable that they have seriously dropped off, and they've had one or two good games. The Burnley game is, of course, a prime example. The Fulham game, De Bruyne could easily have had a cricket score, but he didn't. He didn't. And with Southampton and Newcastle up next, I can totally understand why it would be KD bye-bye. At the same time, I still think that there's more than enough capacity there to outscore all the rest of the premiums in those next two games. And City could just as well rack up a big score. And we know that it's always there. And with Spurs having Leicester up next, I expect that's going to be a tight enough game. I'm content to go without Son for yet another week. Liverpool, Crystal Palace, they're traditionally a tough game for Liverpool. So again, I'm not rushing to get Salah back in after selling him on the hokey-cokey. The end of the thing is that, yeah, the other premiums have proven to be much, much better value than KDB so far. But at the same time, I don't think that it's quite as simple as discount KDB, City's penalty taker, in a team that will score 3 or 4 goals soon at some stage. Just hasn't happened too frequently.
Sure. I just think that I agree with you, the stats are still pretty scary. So he's top for XA over the last 6, comfortably beating out Bruno. I think he's also in the top 3 or 4 for shots in the box. So, I mean, of all players, yes, he's the one who's kind of underperforming what you'd expect.
It's more shots in the box than Jamie Vardy in the last 6. It's very good. He's ahead of Calvert-Lewin. He's quite close to Benteke.
Yeah, close to Benteke, indeed.
The stat monster from Belgium himself. So,
I mean, as I said, I'm basically trying to build a case to do something that I'm... If I didn't want to remove him to finance stuff for the doubles and blanks, I wouldn't be as strongly building the case. And as I've said, I'm being explicit about the fact that that's my underlying motivation for building this case. But to flip it on the other side and look at Son for a second, he's overperformed actually by 6.6. And I guess, yeah, I mean, he's a clinical top-class finisher, isn't he? If there is a finishing skill in real football, like there is a Football Manager, he'd have 18 or 19. Like, think sort of Danny Ings with the curl finishes, that sort of ability to be able to convert those chances.
Certainly this year anyway.
Well, that's an interesting one. So over the last 5 years, how many years has he overperformed his XG?
Overperformed it barely or overperformed it?
Overperformed it.
Oh, how many years am I going with? 2 or 3? I'd say he's probably outperformed it on all of them based on the framing of that question.
That's it. So according to Understat, over the last 5 years, he's outperformed it in every single year. And there were 3 years when he significantly outperformed it. So he outperformed it by more than 2.5. So there's all that, right? Now let's add in the FPL elements of Son. For this is kind of in answer to the question about Son and KDB and Son's kind of longevity here. He's a just below Kane in terms of points scored, isn't he? Or is he just above him now? I think he might be just above him now, actually, because he scored this week. And he's got 6% ownership and rising. Now, you can't win with him, but you certainly are punished without him, was my experience from this weekend and the weekend before and the weekend before. We are going to do probably in January a should we have sold Spurs pod? Just because I think that's going to be quite an interesting one. Maybe a masochistic one, but an interesting one to do. And I kind of got to the point this weekend where I was just like, if I can't beat them, I really need to join them and just reverse the issue and not make a position out of the failed issue. In answer to a couple of his questions then, is KDB the cuttable premium? Obviously, with reservations, it's maybe a qualified yes if you want to get Spurs back on your side, because the ownership is so high. If you are struggling, they are going to probably smash you a little bit, especially because their fixtures do get considerably better quite soon. I know it's Leicester and Wolves next too, but after that, things do kind of improve as I think 16 and 17 especially is very, very nice.
I think these two fixtures that are coming up for Spurs, and just the last two games have been quite instructive about Spurs, and I think they've maybe hinted at something that could have happened all year which didn't happen, which was just Spurs being caught out for trying to counter-attack or to just efficiently win games. Now, in the Crystal Palace game, that resulted obviously in a draw and disappointment, and of course we still had returns for Son and Kane, as they do, but yeah. It was one each, okay, and that's just how it works now, it seems. The Liverpool game, on the other hand, and I know people will point to the XG, they'll point to the fact that Spurs had the chances, but that's only because Liverpool have a style that kind of complements their counter-attacking, and so, you know, Liverpool had the confidence to play the game their way and play into Spurs' hand to some extent and get the win, and they did get the win. Leicester and Wolves are kind of the types of games that I think will be tough for Spurs. And with that in mind, I'm just not in as big a rush to get Son in now. The Fulham game in game week 16, Fulham's obviously having a slight upturn in form, but there's no way I'm going without Son and Kane for that game, though.
Yeah, and then 16-17, as you said, Fulham and Leeds, those are the ones I guess people would be targeting, definitely. But, you know, in answer to a couple of these questions, then FPL Pricey, he asked about the value of KDB versus Son. I think, without knowing how KDB does against Southampton, Newcastle, yeah, I think it's indisputable that 9.5 million of Son is better value than 11.9 million of KDB on paper. Yes, KDB is probably a better footballer, but as an FPL asset, 9.6 million for Son is a massive discount on the premium. And if Son can keep up his underlying data, well, he has overperformed in the past. So, yeah.
And like, look, you'd think he would. Like, you really would think he will.
Exactly.
You can't making some sort of forecast that he won't is just too dangerous now.
It's gambler's fallacy. And then I think Nick said at the start of the season, this is the season that he gets over 200 points because he's never done it before. And he's over halfway now. I would not be surprised, barring injury, touch wood doesn't happen. And I wouldn't be surprised if he does manage to achieve that, especially if they do keep efficiently winning games like they do. So yeah, there you go. That's my sort of slight treatise on why I might sell KDB sometime soon. And Stag's very, very wise words of probably why he shouldn't. And ignore what I do because I'm terrible at FPL. Right, next question then. Pre-wildcard differential. So we know a lot of people are planning to smash out their wildcard in game week 16. There are a lot of patient people out there who have kept it. Vardy Boys got onto us and asked if there are any under-the-radar differentials to target for the next few ahead of wildcarding. So I think that'll be just the next two in isolation, I believe. And Lemboy Ayobami also asked a similar question. He said he's willing to sell KDB. Again, we just spoke about that. And he's pursuing some punts. He says Aguero in is one that he's considering. So what sort of players have caught our eye? I guess maybe after this evening, Rashford and Martial coming forward is an obvious kind of thing. I did look at their stats before for this question, and Rashford was pretty much nowhere. I mean, I don't think anybody could have looked at those underlying stats and went, yeah, Rashford's definitely bound to blow up. That's absolutely rubbish. Unless you're John Truelove, of course. He never really got that out of position fanfare that Aubameyang did when he was reclassified, did he? And Martial's obviously been a bit rubbish this year.
Blank game week, I think, really did halt any sort of optimism about the United players just in game week one, let's say. And that's probably why Rashford didn't get talked about too much. But yeah, the underlying stats just haven't been so much that you'd be jumping on them. And of course, when there's Bruno in there, probably go for that talismanic figure on penalties ahead of Rashford. That's been his greatest issue. Like, is he a differential? Yeah. Do they have Leeds next? Yeah, that's an okay game. But I'm not thinking that I'd be rushing to get him in, nevertheless.
No, I think he sits alongside Bruno in a sort of a double up to differentiate sort of thing. I think it would take a brave manager to go Rashford over Bruno, because any return where Bruno best Rashford, you're just going to be crumbling, aren't you? Unless you live a charmed life like Mr. Harris does. But yeah, it's just one of those anyway. Moving on to other differentials, Anthony, do any other ones come to mind in your travail through the data?
I think it is the most transferred in player this week, Pedro Neto, 5.8 million, 3 goals, 1 assist in the last 5. He's obviously getting good game time now and getting in a pretty solid position with Raul Jimenez out. His, you know, the underlying stats are fine, perfectly serviceable, great for a 5.8 million option. But like, and of course, yeah, Wolves have some decent fixtures as well coming up. Those next 2, you've Burnley away and the Spurs game, which isn't that great, but kind of in a more kind of longer term horizon, their fixtures aren't too bad. You could talk about the likes of Lookman and Caballero there as well. Newcastle away, Southampton home up next, as a Spurs game, and then a Burnley game. Like, they actually do have quite good underlying stats. Caballero definitely stand out, and obviously has the penalties. Lookman, just he's 5.0, which kind of makes him a pretty handy option to put into your side. That said, just sorry, Tom, before you jump on it, but I do think that it's just looking at the fixtures and looking at who's in form and where you probably need to be getting your money in these next 1 to 2 to 3 weeks. I feel like it's the composite differential is what you should be chasing. You know, the good players that you've got in your team as a group together being your differential, not necessarily the random differential. That said, Lookman, Caballero, good enablers, Neto, likewise. But I don't think that they should be your main transfer objective.
Yeah, that is exactly going to be my approach. But outside of my approach, which is to basically get the ultimate five midfield, I think I will give a few names here. So you have Caballero, third for XG over the last 6. You know, Newcastle and Southampton. I mean, not great, but Newcastle just conceded 5 against Leeds. So maybe they're all low XG shots, well, a lot of the low XG shots, mind. Allaire Copter, third for shots in the box over the last 6. He's got a London derby versus Chelsea and Brighton in the next 2. Are you really going to go there? Really? Probably not. And Click at Leeds as well. So he's third for chance creation in the last 6 and on penalties 2. So similar sort of proposition to Caballero, one that Matthew Jones picked out in a group chat that I'm in. They've got Man United and Burnley next though, so not the best, but Leeds do create a lot of chances, so feasibly he could be one worth looking at. And another thing to pull out here, just from looking at the stats now, I'm not sure anyone's going to buy these people, but Lloris is 4th for points scored over the last 6 game weeks with 40. He's scored more points than Kane over the last over the last 6 weeks, which is absolutely mad. And the West Brom defence is the final thing I want to mention as well. Sam Allardyce comes back to the Premier League. Yes, defensive solidity reigns. Cups of wine are consumed in the director's box. So Allardyce, 61% draws and wins versus losses in the Premier League. Never been relegated. And West Brom, funnily enough, are only a Moyes away from the managerial merry-go-round bingo, it should be said. So they've had Pardew, Allardyce, Hodgson, Pulis. They're just missing Moyes. It's a shame. Same as Crystal Palace, by the way. So yeah, maybe we'll see Johnston, Darnell Furlong, these sorts of players in the meta. Isn't there an O'Shea there, Anthony, as well?
There is, yeah, Darrell O'Shea.
Yeah, I thought that might
be. Republic of Ireland international as well.
Yeah. Always tends to be in one of the three teams.
Yeah. That's the truth of it. Yeah, he lends his name to my FPL team name, actually, 50 Shades of O'Shea.
Oh, nice. Yeah, so probably not an actual relation of yours, nor the great John, but nonetheless,
I can confirm neither a relation of myself nor John O'Shea.
We've not seen each other at the conventions, just kind of nodded over the convention hall. How are you doing there? Right, okay. So yeah, quite a lot of differentials there, I suppose. Over the next 2, especially, it's going to be an interesting time just to see what the rotation's like, and oh, Christ knows. But yeah, hopefully you'll find something out of that. But yeah, Anthony did mention getting your group of players aligned, I suppose, to cover as many of the bases, or you know, just refine your 11, I guess, and maybe that could be the best thing to do. So focus on plugging gaps in your team rather than kind of going for these shoot for the moon sort of buys. All right, next question. Defensive planning. I think we've had sort of a question like this for the last couple of weeks, but Bryn Stewart nonetheless asked this week, what are your season plans for your defence? Ooh, big ask. But he says it feels like midfield and forward line is pretty much template, because everyone's got very similar big boys. So is there any hope in the clean sheets? And this is funny because I noted, I think at the start of this game week in kind of our little mini league, Anthony, that Nick and James Carroll, who were vying for the top, they had basically everything similar in the front line, but it was all in the defence who was winning or losing this week. So it does seem that there's a lot of this sort of thing going on where the defence seems to be a source of real differentiation at the moment. So, you know, as tiredness mounts, do you think we'll see more clean sheets or less?
You see, okay, basically, it's interesting that Bryn has asked this question and said that the midfield and forward line is pretty much template. I'd have almost wondered, was the defence already template? I feel that, okay, you've taken the James and Nick contrast there to suggest that there were kind of differences in defence, but I think that there's an awful lot of the same defenders too. There's quite a lot of one Man City, one Chelsea, one Villa, and then maybe you have your variation in the zone of like the next two players in there. There's usually a Leeds guy in there as well, let's be honest, Stuart Dallas or whatever. So I kind of feel like there is a settled core there that a lot of teams tend to have.
The highest owned Man City player is 4.1% owned, Ruben Dias.
It's funny the way that like the
it's Kyle Walker 11%, actually, forget that.
Yeah, but it is kind of funny the way like the City defenders aren't actually that highly owned in the overall world. And yet you look at kind of Twitter and they're there knocking away in pretty much all the teams that I seem to pay any attention to.
Yeah.
So funny the way things go. And that makes sense because City, in terms of underlying stats, are the best defense. They're in last six, let's say, they're the lowest for big chances conceded, shots in the box, good on the XGC as well. Chelsea defense likewise. And so it's quite logical to have one, if not two, or even three from the Chelsea defense. And I think that the Leeds defense, like, I just think it's Stuart Dallas who is like some sort of like midfield forward defender hybrid is the one to have in your side and just kind of keep it simple with them. So my season plans for my defence, Bryn, really, there can't be season plans. It'll develop, I think, as a new form defence comes through. I've already got my Sam Allardyce insurance package in Sam Johnston in my team. So with that in mind, I don't see where I'm going to be going next defence-wise. As I said to the last question, I think I'm going to be kind of prioritising getting my premiums right, and that's where my transfers are going to go. I do have Soufal at the moment, and I might get out of that West Ham defence. That's one thing I may do. Burnley, I still don't have. Tempting. I know you're going to say the double game week, Tom. I'm not thinking about it. Really, I'm not thinking about it yet. Burnley's there, obviously. Charlie Taylor, 4.4, two CSs or team clean sheets in the last two. Wolves home, Leeds away up next, then Sheffield United and Fulham. So good fixtures coming there for Burnley.
Yeah, I'll probably be looking at Charlie Taylor this week, 4.4. I mean, that's a bargain, really, isn't it, for a route into that defence? I mean, as you said, those four fixtures, Wolves, Sheffield United and Fulham, those are going to be diced, aren't they? Those are clean sheets. We'll be hoping to mug a 1-0 from a Chris Wood shin, something like that, from a corner. But, you know, Tarkowski and me, their return has really made a huge difference to that Burnley team. And Nick Pope is back in form, as you saw with all the saves this evening, or maybe you didn't, and you did save yourself a bit of 90 minutes of boredom. The other one to maybe mention is Palace, 15-17. So we've got Liverpool next, but they've got Villa, Leicester and Sheffield United. They are playing a bit more of an attacking game at the moment, but I wonder whether, with tiredness creeping in, they could revert to a more compact sort of way of things, especially for Villa and Leicester. Scott Dan there is 4.4, for example. I know Koyawate is a defender, so it is kind of slim pickings. But yeah, I'm broadly aligned with what you said there, Anthony. I think that it's one of the things that does evolve. It's hard to say you've got a season plan with defence. I mean, back in the day, you used to say treat your defence as a unit, etc., etc. Like, don't make defensive transfers really unless you absolutely have to. But I think the recent things have definitely challenged that in terms of the attacking fullbacks and how that's worked. I mean, the Chelsea players that you mentioned, obviously, in many people's teams, I can see, for example, Chilwell, Sir Reece James, being done by a few down the line to find 0.7, 0.6 million worth of value. And obviously, there's Robertson as well. So Liverpool do have a double game week in in game week 19. So I expect there to be some movement around with him, especially because he looks like the main double up that you do with Salah. I can't really see anybody else apart from, you know, Jota's out for a while. Don't want Firmino, probably don't want Mane in his current form. don't want, you know, you
probably, Trent is, yeah, Trent yeah. is the only one that the argument is going to rear its head over the next few games when he's got the game time in, I guess. He's obviously just coming back at the moment. But yeah, Liverpool with that double game week, United at home and Burnley at home are, you know, as things go, quite decent fixtures. And I think definitely now our friend, our old Nicholas has him already, but I do think that Liverpool defenders, or i.e. Robertson, who can kind of get you those attacking returns and defensive returns, is a bit of a differential, let's say, in the FPL community, not in actual terms. He's 18.1% owned, but in FPL, let's say, community terms, I think there's a bit of headway to be made there with him, for sure. And he is the route to the double up for now.
I mean, he's on all the corners now, both sides. And if you watch them play, like, Trent has basically become a tucking in Ben Davis style fullback, or fullback defensive duties, rather, and Robertson's allowed to do what he wants. It's really interesting to see how he's kind of, Trent's game's completely kind of moved backwards in terms of what he now does. Like, defense solidity seems to be what he's all about. Robertson is given license to do what he wants. Really,
it's kind of mad, isn't it? Yeah, it's been kind of hard to work out whether that's kind of an Alexander Arnold maintenance policy, or if this is kind of more of a long term thing.
Yeah, no, it is very weird, because you obviously see, like, Joe Gomez fielded in situations where they wanted to kind of play more defensively, and I wonder whether Klopp's kind of tasked Trent with being more defensive this year rather than going for the assist. But, you know, lots of us went for him in game week one and had him for a little while. I think I had up until game week 8, game week 9, something like that. And it's been really fascinating to see the turnaround. I know a few cool kids have gone, oh yeah, I'm getting Trent straight back in, and have been quite happy about that. But, you know, watching the games, you've got to just be looking at Robertson and thinking, yeah, well, he's the one. And I think, as I said, that him being the only viable double up, really, with Salah maybe the one there in terms of the defence. But yeah, no, broadly interesting kind of area. The only other one to mention, by the way, is James Justin at Leicester. So each week I do actively root for a clean sheet wipeout, because he's owned by almost a quarter of the game still. And so he was 4.5 at the beginning. Obviously, people like us were saying, oh, that's fantastic value. And he has been fantastic value. But with Anthony's man, Ricky P, Ricardo Pereira coming back, he may not be an active member of defence much longer. But yeah, I still root for them having a clean sheet wipeout.
It did, yeah, but with Ricardo Pereira, it's kind of one of those things. I think we've been saying he's coming back for
Nathan Ferguson, yeah.
Yeah, there's 13 game weeks of that now, really, at this stage. So I think initially we thought it was going to be October, and I know he get a little bit of game time, or he's certainly been back in training with the first
team. He was in the Europa League,
Yeah, hasn't played a Premier League game so far this season, and the day will come, but James Justin has definitely done very well so far, top scoring Leicester defender, and definitely popular for a reason.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. Indeed. Right. Well, that's probably enough on the defence, unless you want to go into Vestergaard. But let's not talk about him. Southampton defence, though. Well, highly owned. Right. Okay. And the next thing, we're still staying at the back. Goalkeeper transfers. So, Ant Dickinson, he's planning ahead of the blank double game weeks. We'll talk about that, as I said, much more next week. And he asks, is there any merit in goalkeeper transfers, especially if you're planning a bench boost eventually? For free? Yeah. Sure, why not? You know, Johnston and Martinez rotate well, I guess, if you're doing a bench boost and you want to keep Martinez for whatever reason. I don't ever rate a goalkeeper transfer for a hit, though, at any point. Lowest ceiling, and if it's non-playing keeper, but if it's low non-playing keeper, you might as well make the move or try to see for free ahead of the bench boost, something like that. I'm planning to leave Martinez, I think, as it stands, just have him as a single and just leave him there, basically. I mean, keepers are very unsexy, aren't they? But you did make a goalkeeper transfer, didn't you, the other week? Did you remove Martinez?
No, I kept Martinez. Okay. I swapped Beta Keep Peacock Farrell to get in Sam Johnston. So I have those two goalkeepers now. I've never liked going with just one goalkeeper, and I just had to fix it. And when the Martinez blank came up, I took the chance. I did take a hit. You can say that Johnston was the hit, or you could say that the other transfer was the hit. I don't mind, guys.
Yeah, because Johnston got zero.
Yeah. So we can just point to Mara as being the hit instead, because his four-pointer was so much better. But at the same time, look, for Ant's question, I think you need to prioritize probably outfield players. Like, are you going to get to 15 for this bench boost? Like, the goalkeeper transfer probably shouldn't be your main objective here, your main priority here. I feel like if you have that spare transfer to use, there's probably like a succession of transfers that you can go through to maximize your points in the weeks coming up to the double game week, which will probably yield more FPL points than just having two goalkeepers on your bench boost in a double game week. That's my hunch. You're putting an awful lot of hope on things going right across two games in a double game week when you might be able to just, you know, have the right premiums for two different weeks in the next five, yeah, which feels a lot better to me.
Yeah, I mean, we'll get to this again next week, but if you've got a goalkeeper who over two weeks, if it's a single game week goalkeeper, right, they're probably going to have a game in the blank, is how it looks at the moment. There's no teams who have a blank and then a single. So you get two games, just depends in what week you get the two games effectively. So you don't really win too much. And because they're goalkeepers, I mean, you're hoping for a pen save to get a real explosion, aren't you? So,
and if you just look at the double game week fixtures as well, like Fabianski's too expensive for you to go for. You've got better, cheaper options there in that West Ham defense if you want to, the likes of my friend Soufal, who is still on the cutting block, just in the long term sense for that question. And like really, otherwise, you're looking at Ilan Meslier, really, the Leeds keeper. Decent fixtures there, Brighton and Southampton, but
they're not keeping any clean sheets, are they at all? I mean, into second.
Dallas might score.
Yeah,
yeah.
I don't think Meslier will. And Johnston as well has got the Sam Allardyce factor. So, I mean, that could be, again, quite a decent one. But I mean, I'm quite happy with just leaving Martinez in there. I mean, back-to-back BAP performances has been quite useful. So I'll definitely take that. And the final question this week, so quite short and sweet. Is FPL Elf, who's a Southerner, I found out this week. He's a Leeds fan, but he's a Southerner. And you know, sometimes when you speak to someone on the internet for quite a while, and you don't really know them very well, but you take little hints about them. Big Leeds fan, you know, has an avatar of an elf. So I just assume, I heard this sort of northern brogue coming through everything that he wrote. Funny, he was a Southerner from Kent, and I just get the kind of chavvy accent in my ear whenever I read his voice now. But anyway, he asks...
Sorry, Todd, do you think that the north of England is in the Arctic Circle, that the elf thing was an indication that he was the north of England?
I did.
Like, it's not in Finland.
I know, but I just assume, you know, it's dark, people... No, people live in a different way. I don't know. I don't get it. I'm kidding, of course. I love the North. But just to move to the intended joke about an elf's actual accent, because my girlfriend's from Kent as well, so this is how people like that sound. All right, mate. So how do you deal with a horrible game week without doing something rash when there's just a couple of weeks to digest it? I'm guessing do violence and beer. Any other suggestions? Is what he asked us this week. It's been a difficult week for him, I'm going to say. I did extend him a virtual hug. I think he was about 7 million a game week rank or something like that. It was a genuine stinker. I do genuinely feel horrible for him. But I guess, you know, if you're at the point now, game week 13 in the season, we're at the point where not many people are new to FPL. You'll all have had bad game weeks before. And I guess you just have sufficient learned experience in how to deal with a bad game week. My advice succinctly is this. One, absorb. It's going to hurt a bit. I've had a lot of these, so I've got a system down, right? I tend to be quite numb to it, actually. But I try to resist the urge to be on Twitter or masochistically making rash changes to my team. So absorb, you know, just take it. It's happened. You know, you've got to deal with it quickly. Two, laugh. After a while, you get to the point when you remember you made a perfectly plausible decision or decisions and it's just not worked for you. Call it luck, call it variance. Call it Pep being a dick, but just laugh. And finally, move on. As time moves away from last week and towards a new one, you'll start to look forward and move on and think, what can I get next week? And bury all the bad memories of the week just gone somewhere in your head, never to be thought of again. So yeah, absorb, laugh and move. Anthony, how do you deal with bad game weeks?
Usually I just tend to mull over it and just disappear from at least tweeting too much, but I'm still there responding away quietly, just mulling over the thing. But I think my strategy is to definitely avoid rash transfers. And what I tend to do instead is make a late transfer. So, you know, I basically just allow my gut to take me at the very end. I, you know, absorb the stats as I do whilst doing this pod or whilst sitting on Twitter mulling and just reading the odd article and the subreddit and things. And then I just let my gut take me. And you've actually got a really good opportunity, Elf, with a traditional Saturday deadline, of course, being 11 a.m. in all parts of England, north and south. So I think it's a good opportunity to do that late change on a Saturday morning and just really kind of feel your way through this and get out the other side. And I think you'll be fine.
Yeah, just make sure you turn the dial up on about 10:30 so you've got time to be on the internet in time for 11 o'clock. B, But yeah, no, I think it's definitely one of those that, yeah, we've all had horror game weeks, and I often feel actually a little bit jealous of people who don't podcast if you've had a horrible game week, because the amount of times, dear Lord, that I've had to come on here and put a brave face on it, or you know that meme of a angry face behind a kind of a smiling Mars face while Nick goes, well, you know, I got 75 points this week, and yeah, you know, I was a bit disappointed actually because this guy got 4, and I'm just like, shut the Jesus Christ, I got 50. Shut up, Nick. But I was like, yeah, so I was like, well done, mate. Well done.
Yeah, Carl Walker's Peter saved my game week. 18 points. Go away.
I got 9 points off the bench, and that was good. Was, oh, my God.
Captain, the best player in my team, of course, as well. Nice 25 pointer or 25. Yeah, if you got 25 from doubling a captain score, that would be pretty good.
Yeah, all coming up Harris this year, isn't it? As it seems to every year. I don't really know what it is. But anyway, hopefully that was vaguely useful. Hopefully you're now in the laugh stage rather than in the absorbing stage. And hopefully you haven't made a dire transfer. I apologise for your Ken accent. I'm sure you've got a nice one. Right, let's move on to the end of the pod then. And it's transfers and captains. And Anthony, I'm aware that you haven't really thought about it. Have you thought about it during the course of this pod?
I've thought about it somewhat, Tom. And I think I'll sell Riyad Mahrez. I'm tripled up on City at the moment between Cancelo, De Bruyne and Mahrez. And I think he is going to be the one that moves for someone. I have a little bit of budget there, so I could do something interesting. I'm just not quite certain what I won't gild the lily and make up that I have some great plan. I really, really don't. As for my captain, it's probably going to be Fernandez. I haven't quite got over the fact, the novelty of having him in my side, even after getting a nice disappointment for having him in my side for the first time this season. I think I'll go forward with that again, although Kane is in my head.
Yeah, that makes sense. I'm going to have to adopt the if you can't beat them, join them with Son. I think I don't think I can quite get to Kane as easily. I can get to Son and the beauty of his prices that you can get there. It's just how I do it. So before I sat down to do my notes, I was thinking, yeah, I'm selling Kevin De Bruyne. But kind of thinking about it a bit more today, messing around with my team, I found a way that I can get Son alongside Grealish, De Bruyne, Fernandes, and Salah all in one team. It does mean I've got to buy Brewster this week. It does mean a bench of Lewis, Kilman and Brewster for Chris for Friday, for Saturday and for Boxing Day. So that's a bit worrying. However, I can get a very good team to start with and then build from there. And it might be the last chance I can do something like this and have all five of those players in one team, in one midfield. So I'm a little bit tempted to do it. I was really close to doing it actually on my wild card. I don't post my thoughts up anymore on Twitter. I used to back in the day, like, write every single thought I had and I post it. Like, here's my plan. Is my plan now? Is my plan now? Plan now. I kind of stopped doing that. But there was a 3-5-2 that I really liked then, which I didn't go with in the end. I went for the 3-4-3 that I did go with. And now I see it staring at me in the face. I think, oh, you know, I can't pass this up a second time, can I? So I'm very tempted to do it. We will see. But I'm kind of, now I've calmed down a little bit about De Bruyne, with Southampton and Newcastle coming up next, I'm slightly less hot on selling him than I was the other day, and certainly less hot on selling him now than I was this morning after the 4-pointer beat the 2-pointer. So there you go. Anyway, I think that's probably all we've got time for in this little quick fire, so I've got a bit of editing to get up.
Yeah, it was a pretty rapid pod, but hopefully that will have assisted you folks. We were Who Got the Assist. Thanks so much for listening. Don't forget to hit the subscribe button if you have not already. Correspondence section, whogottheassist@gmail.com, with all of your thoughts, addendums, opinions, theories, voice messages, songs, poetry, Christmas carols. We'll take it all, guys. And we'll be back on Monday night with FPL General to discuss Christmas and those blanks and doubles.
Yeah, really looking forward to having Mark FPL General on the pod, as we seem to every year now as a Christmas tradition. So yeah, that would be a nice Christmas present for you, our listeners. I hope to assist you in this quick turnaround period. Looking forward to return to a full fat pod format in short order. Speak to you in just a few days. Good luck in the game week this weekend. Goodbye.
So long.
All right.
Very good. Cool. Very good. Very good.
I'll let you go to bed.
Yeah, I think it's an up at 5:30 type job for me again and finish this essay.
Excellent. Good luck.
Cheers.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist? Who got the assist?
Sports Social Podcast Network.